then Colin Thornton, works manager of Doughty's, had also been made redundant, and he'd gone to a company in the Forest of Dean called Lydney Products.
Yeah, yeah.
And he phoned me up one day and said, we need a materials manager here, Mike, what do you reckon?
Mm.
So I go and have a look around, and I say, well, it's closer than the other one. And they just come out of a management buyout.
Mm.
So they were sort of struggling along.
What did they actually make of it, Mike?
They made the laminated interiors of buses, the pretty colours that you see.
Oh, right.
Floors.
Right.
Other panels for other people.
What crash barriers. What do they make them out of? Was it plastic or...?
No, they bought the pattern top from Formica or Perstock Warehouse or other companies,
yeah.
And they bonded them onto an aluminium sheet.
Oh, right.
And then they cut them to whatever shape they wanted to be, with a hand router usually, with a die, you know, just a shape. But when I went, because he did say we were in lots of problem, the order book was at the best $500,000 a month.
Wow.
And the arrears were 9 months.
Oof, crikey.
Now, at the time, many of the bus companies didn't realise that because they were as bad. but at the same time, we all seemed to get better. So I went in there, and this was also the time when the salesman could order his own material. But he also had, between the five salesmen, they also had a team of three girls who could also order the material. So I found when I went in there quite quickly was, either it was ordered twice or not at all.
Oh dear.
you get to delivery day, and half of it was there, and half of it wasn't. You know, it was terrible. No wonder they were 9 months in arrears.
Yeah.
But anyway, we, Thornton and I, between us, got the arrears down to virtually nothing, because lots of companies then, as they still are, were keen to play. I mean, back to Formica. Formica held us at arm's length because we were terrible payers and terrible orderers.
Yeah.
So I sort of went up there several times and got batches agreed, and they held stock of some for us, so that if we were stuck, we could buy it out of their stock.
Mm.
I got better prices, can I say? But in return, they were guaranteed a certain percentage of our business.
Yeah.
Where we were allowed to choose.
Yeah.
Because some bus companies could say, I want Rainbow, yeah. and if someone else sold Rainbow, you haven't got any option. You've got to go there.
Mm.
But if they didn't care, because very often we'd offer them the colour. Mm-hmm. I went to several weekend shows where they were going to introduce a new bus or a new coach, what colours would we like and how would we want it, and we input that, or I did, because I went for the company.
Yeah.
So we do that, and I worked there doing that, and they made crash barriers, floors, plywood for a variety of customers. When I say a variety, the biggest one was the MOD, because it was one of, I think, only two companies in England that had a kite mark for making plywood.
Oh, okay.
Strangely enough, from Fielding's presses.
I was just going to ask that, yeah.
Fielding's Blatton presses.
So how big were those Blatton presses then?
Oh, they take a 5x10.
Oh, right, right.
But not a lot more.
No.
But 5x10, you know, and what was that? How many such as that? Probably 15, 20.
Wow.
So they do quite a lot in one go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because when I walked in, I recognised them, but I could see the water supply.
Yeah,
for just, all the pipes.
Yeah, so they obviously water heated.
They were water heated because, of course, being plywood makers, they burnt their own scrap because their furnace was wood fired.
Right, right.
And of course, all the companies around the forest used to sell their wood scrap to us. No, give it to us. And we burn it, so the heating was for free.
Okay, so you were at Lydney Products. How long were you there? Were you there for some time?
No, I think I was there for 4 years. Colin Thornton was operations manager, operations director. And I was purchasing an engineering manager. And he fell out with the boss, and he decided to leave. And they had a new operations director in who I just couldn't get on with. Lots of things he wanted to do that I couldn't agree with. Lots of things he didn't want to do that I thought were fairly essential. So I left as well. Well, 6 months after that, they went broke. So I left. And I had a few months off. And then Doughty's phoned and said, I think the first one was the A340.
So A3, is that the big transport plane?
Yeah, they hadn't built it then, but it was on the lines, as it were.
This is Airbus?
This is Airbus.
Right, yeah.
And they phoned and said, because my wife still worked there, so they all knew what I was doing or not.
Right.
And they phoned and said, we've got a few problems with Airbus. Can you come and help? So in I go. It was still in the late design stage, but obviously the critical parts were in manufacture, or at least some of the critical parts. So I went there really to help supplies and purchasing, to get all of the bits, the purchase bits, the bought out bits, the, all that sort of stuff, up together at the right time. And it was quite a difficult task, actually, because they were quite a long way behind. Now, one of the problems was they no longer had a planning department.
Oh, wow.
So, and you know, I mean, Airbus, for instance, the A320, I think they do something like 35 sets a month now.
Yeah.
But that's set in stone, there's no problems.
Yeah.
So it rolls along. Now, one of the problems with the first two aircraft, everybody wants to do it, but nobody's interested in it because it's not worth any money yet. You know, it's just two bits or four bits or six bits. So,
and in
design terms, it's the same.
Yeah.
So I sort of, it's a bit like a broom. You sweep a broom along and you take the main with it, but all the bits fall off the side.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
At the time, the bits were the A340 because no one.
They weren't interested.
They weren't interested in, yeah. And it wasn't on the system, so the computer couldn't handle it.
Oh,
it wanted
wow.
somebody with a brain to put it together. That was all.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I had a meeting every morning
with
everybody to say, what are we doing? Where are we going? What's on order now and what's delivered and what's left to do? I made him issue a proper list of parts, which was a big thing, because at least then we could understand what we didn't have, which we didn't have before.
So that was a bit of paper rather than something on the computer.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, I had a pucker list of parts. I mean, it went on a computer quite quickly, but I had a proper list of parts, and I ran a thing at the time called a traffic light chart. Red, amber, and green. If red, it wasn't there. If it was amber, I knew where it was, but it wasn't finished yet. And if it was green, it was either finished or good to go.
Yeah.
And I did that every morning. And we got the first two sets out on time.
Yeah.
And the then operations director called me and he said, "You're a magician, Mike. I got no idea what you did." I said, "Well, I talked to people."
Yeah.
Because I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I talked to people. And we got it all together. And he said, "I know we're paying you, but take Sally out for dinner somewhere. No expense spared." And we went to somewhere that was actually awful but well spoken for, and it was 240 quid, and I paid it without a demur. I gave him the expense sheet, thank you very much, and it was done. And then so I left there, and I thought, well, perhaps I'll retire now. And about 3 months later on, another phone call from Doughty's: "Can you come back? We're having problems with the Nimrod." Now, you all remember the Nimrod. Again, it was only ever going to be 20 aircraft, and it wasn't even that. It was a hell of a thing to do, and it just, when you're doing 30 odd sets of Airbus, umpteen sets of Tornado at the time, Typhoon was just coming through, apart from the other civil customers, what sort of a looking going to get? So I did much the same thing.
Yeah.
Morning meeting, where is everything, what are we doing with it, what's next? And it got so serious that the works manager called me in one day and said, "I'm going to have to ask you not to come onto the shop floor." I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, you're upsetting my supervisors." I said, "Well, your supervisors tell me on a morning they're going to do something that day, and on a Tuesday they haven't done it. Well, I am upset, but they ought to be upset with themselves for not doing what they said they're going to do, not with me for asking them why not." So I never stopped going onto the shop floor, and we did get them out on time.
Yeah, yeah.
The first three sets.
Yeah.
And then, talking about vacancies being engineered, this was the new Typhoon. I had had a bit to do it. Can I go back to this? When I was planning manager, we had our order. BA made two, and it was free.
Two Typhoons.
It was free. This was back in the '70s,
right?
And this was free. Everybody paid for their own bits.
Wow.
You got nothing out of nothing. But then already, the agreement was in place that the Germans would do this and the Italians would do that and the Spanish would do that. That was already in place, you know, for the future. I was doing my bit in planning, and I was again called into the office. No, I wasn't. That's not true. I married my second wife, and we were on honeymoon. And in those days, as a manager, you had to say where you were and what you were doing. So they phoned up this bloody hotel at Saunton. "What are you doing, Mark?" I said, "You know, this is my boss." I said, "You know very well what I'm doing. I'm here on my honeymoon." He said, "Well, come back tomorrow because you're going to Italy on Thursday." So then I go back and I get briefing. "Well, the Italians should be doing this and they're nowhere near it. Go and give us a report." And this was nothing to do with me. I was planning manager. So off I go, and I didn't think much of the place at all. It was called Nardi. They went broke in the end. But I met the rep over there, who also worked for Dowsies, Ron something his name was. He said, "Now, we're going to struggle here because the manager doesn't speak English and it's all got to be translated." So I wound this bugger up, and 10 minutes later he was talking to me in English. So I'm going to play those games with him.
Yeah.
But they didn't do what they said they did, but it got a lot better. So then I was going to come home, and I had another phone call. Well, don't bother to come home. Go to this place in Germany, Liebherr, because they're doing a nose, and they're just as badly off as the Italians. And they had a rep who was a graduate, destined for great things. And he'd been going over there every month, and they'd been telling him the most awful lies. But he didn't know enough about engineering
to
understand what they were. I mean, they told him they had a fire and heat treatment. So when I go there, I said, "Show me the fire then." "Oh, well, we've cleaned it up." "They've not had a fire there ever. Yeah. So I go there. I'm getting assy by now. I'm supposed to be on honeymoon. And I've done my 3 days in Italy, sorting them out. Instead of coming home, I'm back to Germany. So in I go. Hello, Michael. Good German name, Michael. All this bullshit. We go through what they haven't done and what they have done and all the pain about why they haven't done it. And I said, "Well, then where's the recovery plan? Let's have a recovery plan." "Ah, well," he said, "we don't work weekends because all the works go skiing," because it was up under the Alps. It's a beautiful place. So I said, "Well, I'll tell you what. Lend me your fax, and I'll fax all the drawings over to my boss at home, and I'll get a couple of lorries in here." I didn't have the authority for this. I would never have had. I said, "I'll get a couple of lorries in here. We'll take all the bits you haven't finished, and I'll take them home and finish them. How's that?" So they all worked. The only thing they couldn't get, for whatever reason at the time, quite a lot of BOF bits, nuts and bolts and washers of various shapes and sizes. I said, "I'll do all that." I mean, that was easy. It didn't cost me anything anyway. "I'll do all that. You do that." And they did exactly what they said they were going to do. And they delivered the noses on time, because I sent them all these bits. It was probably 100 quid's worth at the most. Got most of them out of stock.
Sorry, when you say the nose, this is the nose of the aircraft.
The nose undercarriage. And associated on.
So that was all made in Germany. Subcontract.
All made in Germany.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, yeah. They had, oddly enough, at the time, probably 90% of it was made in-house, in their own factory.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's like. I've been since, of course, but at the time, because it was only two, that was the other problem, again, with any factory, you're also far to run with two.
Yeah,
when your government says this is going to be a big deal for Germany, so get on to it.
Yeah.
But when you're there trying to make a pound at the end of the day, what are you going to do with it? I didn't have a minute's belief.
No,
but anyway, they did it. So now this, whatever it is coming into production, Typhoon, with Germany and Italy and Spain, and they're still being particularly difficult. Now, the draftsman that I dealt with on the Airbus, he was the chief draftsman for the A340.
So, where's he based then? Bristol?
No, he was at Doughty. He was the designer for the Doughty bits.
Right.
And I'd been up, as you do, every day to harass him. "Where are my drawings? If you can't give me the details, give me the materials." Because he'd harass this chief designer daily to get the bits. And then that had gone, and I'd done the Nimrod and finished that. But then the Typhoon was coming back on stream, and who had been the chief designer was now the project manager.
Right.
So he wanted me on board to help him with the Italians, the French, not the French, the Italians, the Germans, and the Spanish. So they wrote a job description for me. So I applied, and I got it, inevitably. And I did that for a couple of years, I guess.
Yeah.
Then I retired. Did I retire? Yes. I think I did then, yeah.
So how long have you been retired now?
I retired when I was 68.
Yeah.
And I'm 70. And I'm 76 now, yeah. I've been retired 8 years.
Yeah, you don't look it.
No.
My favourite.
Yeah, so, I think that Fieldings obviously gave us a wonderful grounding, and everybody says that. And you learn skills that are useful from then on.
You do. I agree with that entirely.
Yeah.
I mean, when I first went to Doughty's, there were two or three ex-Fieldings machinists on the place, but without any doubt, they were the cream of the crop.
Yeah, yeah.
But in reverse, when I went to Haredale Engineering, we had an ex-Doughty's apprentice who I sacked because he was complete rubbish. He couldn't even sharpen his own tools.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he wasn't used to it.
No, he'd never done it.
Yeah, because I remember when I went to Doughty's, got involved with some project in the early days, and I went through the manufacturing notes, and this was an old aircraft. I mean, it wasn't new. but the layouts, were the manufacturing layouts, were written for a chimpanzee to use.
Mm.
You know, pick up the chuck, or pick up the, you know,
yeah,
the chuck key. Nonsense like that, which yeah. is, which they had to do. Yeah. So, I mean, they were all out in doubties when everything was on a plate for them. But put them into the working world, in my opinion, and the majority of them couldn't manage.
Have to think for yourself.
Have to
yeah.
think for yourself, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, Fielding certainly helped us all with that, I'm sure. Okay, so I find that what people have done after they've left Fielding's can be as interesting, if not more interesting, yeah. than what yeah. we actually did at Fielding's. So thanks very much for telling us then, Mike. I know that you are enjoying your retirement.
Oh, yeah.
Half of it in the UK and half of it in Cyprus, which is, you know, a terrible thing to have to do. But, once again, thanks very much for coming along.